You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome to the last episode of Let's Talk Macro for this year. Ahalya here, keeping you company on the podcast all about macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we, as you know, discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events, all of the happenings that you need to be aware of. As per usual, we've got with us Srijith Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management team, here to take us through today's conversation. Hi, Srijith. Welcome.
Hi, Ilya. Thank you.
All right. So, you know, 2024 has been a very eventful year and economic data has been volatile. Markets have been trying to get a grasp of the actual underlying health of economies, you know, their fiscal and monetary policies, as well as the impact that all of these policies could have. We've spoken about all of these things on our episodes this past year. But today we're not really going to crystal gaze and make forecasts. That's not what we're trying to do. We are instead going to shine a light on some of the main themes to watch out for in 2025. And these are themes that we believe that you should keep tabs on as well as connoisseurs of macroeconomics. So Srijith, let's start off the conversation. Before getting into 2025, let's talk a little bit about the themes and learnings from this year, right? It's only right that we give 2024 some attention as well. So what were some of the key themes that you particularly looked out for at the onset of 2024 and how did those really turn out?
Okay, so in December 2023, the US Fed pivoted by starting to discuss about rate cuts. But US economic data had other plans and the Fed cut for the first time only in September this year. The European Central Bank started the rate cuts earlier as data and assessment, mainly on growth, diverged with the US. So central bank divergence was one main thing we watched out for, particularly as the cycle was just turning towards rate cuts then. We're seeing more divergence in central bank commentary and market expectation on rates, particularly versus the US Fed now. And the second thing is, given the US banking sector issues in early 2023, I think around March 23, and that, you know, thereafter the rates were kept higher without much sort of glaring economic damage, there was always the question of what central banks should do if, you know, some part of the system breaks, whether they'll cut sooner or faster and so on. So price stability versus financial stability was again something we had in mind. And this is again something which comes to the fore only and, you know, mainly during unforeseen events. We also have been keeping an eye on structural versus cyclical economic drivers with respect to growth, inflation and labor market. But some of these are actually things we will keep looking at.
Okay, nice. So some things that have played out this year and some things that are continuing to play out, that is just the nature of macroeconomics. Yeah. So let's jump into the main question that we're trying to answer on today's podcast, which is the themes to look out for in 2025. Let's start, as always, with the US. What in that particular area are the main economic aspects, data or events really that you believe people should keep an eye on?
Okay, so the one main thing we look at is U.S. exceptionalism. So that's on growth. So how strong and how long it lasts. The U.S. economy remained quite strong for a good part of 2024, you know, despite the elevated level of interest rates. We've often discussed before how this has also been driven by fiscal deficit in the U.S., which is now, you know, much higher than pre-pandemic. There are also weaker spots, though, in the economy. For example, like rising credit card and auto loan delinquencies. Labor market has been directionally cooling, although not to the extent one might have thought at the beginning of the year. But let's not forget, for example, the non-farm payroll additions in the US has been, you know, getting subsequently revised. So, for example, we had the data for the year ending March, which was revised down. And the latest quarterly census of employment and wages data suggests even the June quarter data could be revised down. This makes decision-making a little difficult for the Fed, but in terms of data, there's been a consistent downward bias. Recent data on unit labor cost growth has been weaker and even unemployment insurance claims have sort of inched up a bit of late. And we also really don't know when and where the current high productivity, which is sort of partly driven by AI-related investments, you know, that higher productivity, where it settles down. Corporate refinancing will keep happening and that'll be happening at still quite high rates. And we know that immigration policy is also likely to get tighter. So these factors combined should have a bearing on U.S. growth. And the U.S. also sort of already has a double economy in place, you know, where the lower income segment is worse off. Because although inflation has eased, that is the year-on-year growth and prices have eased, price levels after the surge during the pandemic are still quite elevated. This sort of hits the lower income segment much more. and could have been a major factor in the election outcome there. So in short, how US growth really evolves from here is definitely something to look out for.
Okay. In its essence, I think growth exceptionalism, whether it continues or not, and what drives it remains the key aspect to watch out for when it comes to the US. Now, is this a similar trend for Europe and other countries as well? Or, you know, are there different factors sort of guiding the markets across the world?
So growth in Europe has been much weaker. We've spoken about this before. Germany is really slowing. Political tensions are rising in certain big countries within the euro area. So risk to growth remains clearly to the downside. The ECB, that is the European Central Bank, in its latest meeting earlier this month, lowered its 2025 real GDP forecast for the euro area, mainly due to weaker private consumption, expenditure and exports. It in fact acknowledged that growth is losing momentum and economic recovery is likely slower. So the risk to inflation is now clearly two-sided. Earlier it was more skewed upwards, but now it's not the case. It's more two-sided, and the 2% inflation target is likely to be achieved earlier. So market expectations of the magnitude and pace of rate cuts have also risen of late. And US trade policies or trade-related, you know, protectionist policies could add to this and the worries in the euro area. So in short, growth risk and more aggressive policy action is something to look out for in Europe. In some of the other economies, for example, in China, given the property and consumer demand slowdown and the monetary policy, you know, in fact, the fact that monetary policy has already done a fair bit, fiscal is where the action and the expectation of action is. And there has been further acknowledgement and promises of action from policy circles. For example, the Politburo meeting earlier this month, which called for more proactive fiscal policy, unconventional counter-cyclical measures, and the need to stabilize property and stock markets. And this was followed by the Central Economic Work Conference, the CEWC, which called for the need to boost domestic demand. So these are things pretty much everyone is looking for. But the question really is when and the nature, magnitude and impact of measures. Of course, you know, what President Trump decides to do on trade with China in terms of tariffs, etc., is a big question. But if you see Japan, for example, that's a completely different situation there, where Japan is actually hoping to come out from years of deflation. There, the question is whether the pickup in wages and inflation is more structural, or in the Bank of Japan's words, you know, whether there is a virtue cycle between wages and prices. So currently, market expects the BOJ to go ahead with further rate hikes, but one needs to also track the currency there, because much stronger than anticipated appreciation in the JPY can actually hinder subsequent rate hike prospects. So that's sort of the global summary.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Very detailed summary and definitely gives us a good overview of what's going on around the world apart from the US. Weaker growth being the common theme across Europe and China. But, you know, China admittedly has been plagued. We've talked about it before on the podcast as well, with a lot of structural issues really to their economy. Japan, a completely different domestic story. So their journey is really to be on this rate hike path. I'm curious now, as always, about India, particularly after the recent disappointing GDP numbers for the September quarter. Mm. How is that going to play out, and what kind of journey are you going to be keenly tracking for India in 2025?
India's real growth in the September quarter was well below expectation of 5.4% after 6.7% in June. The lower print was driven by moderation in private consumption, fixed investment and trade. And if you see it from the supply side, growth in mining, manufacturing, utilities and construction all sort of eased, while it's only agriculture that really improved, because even services was quite flat. And if you look at the proxy for the private sector output, the real core GVA, that is a gross value added as we call it, it also eased. From 7.3% to 5.3%. And we also know that corporate earnings growth was much weaker in September. Corporate tax collections were therefore weaker. And so has been the overall contribution from government net spending. Credit growth is easing, but that is, again, partly due to RBI's macro-prudential measures on unsecured personal loans also. But importantly, a broad-based pickup in private sector capex has been missing due to weaker consumption growth. And that is amidst a higher leverage among households as well. But what we'll do is therefore track the cyclical growth slowdown, whether it sort of continues and gets more policy weightage, thus evoking policy response from the RBI, let's say on rates and even on liquidity. So we believe, for example, the RBI will commence its shallow rate cut cycle from February and also do OMO purchases of around 1 lakh crore rupees to infuse durable liquidity in the next few months. And I wouldn't be really surprised to see any fiscal measures also to support and sort of reallocate overall economic savings towards households. And on the inflation side, the core inflation seems to be quite moderate, although it's likely bottoming out. Needless to say, food inflation is always on the radar, and hopefully the seasonal disinflation vegetables sort of plays out soon.
Yes, yes. So you'll be tracking, I think, the cyclical slowdown in India. But, you know, like we discussed last time, Srijit, is it right to say that India's structural story is kind of intact at this point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. You know, of course, apart from all of these key aspects that you've talked about, we can't possibly overlook geopolitics, which I'm sure will also be a very important factor in our story this year.
Yeah, yes, of course. That's going to be crucial too.
Yeah, as it is always. And I guess that brings us to the question on the main themes for 2025. So we've talked about the major economies, but what are some of the common key themes that run through all of these economies that you're going to be keeping a tab on? Srijit, maybe take us through that.
Okay, yeah, I think that's a good way to look at what sort of lies ahead. Fiscal versus monetary, you know, should be one theme, I believe. In any country, fiscal policy is an input into monetary policy decision-making as well. On fiscal, one main aspect would be whether fiscal dominance starts to take hold in the US. So whether the new policies after Trump assumes office in January, whether that will be inflationary or not, whether it further increases the fiscal deficit from an already elevated path, and how it impacts the Fed's decision-making will be crucial. We discussed in the previous episode what we believe could be certain offsets or sort of checks to this Trump trade narrative. And it need not be simply higher deficit and higher inflation. So, for instance, the nominee for the Treasury Secretary said he has a 333 economic plan, which is to basically cut the fiscal deficit from around 7% of GDP now to around 3% by 2028, boost real GDP growth to around 3% through deregulation and various other measures, and also increase energy production by the equivalent of 3 million barrels per day of oil. So some of these numbers could be difficult to achieve, but the intended direction does not just point to, you know, higher deficit and higher inflation. So it really calls for a more balanced view on what's happening in the US.
Okay, fantastic. So those are some key themes, but I do want to ask, you know, very quickly, is this fiscal aspect different in the euro area, Srijit?
Yes, so in the euro area, again, we have a fiscal deficit path that is envisaged for the member countries. But we have seen France, for example, having a much higher deficit. And the government, which recently proposed a budget with you know, tough austerity measures, that actually the government got dissolved. So it is going to elections. And so is Germany. So the fiscal angle in the euro area is about higher deficit than pre-pandemic and political uncertainty in some of these countries. In fact, South Korea is another example where political uncertainty is recently. So that's on fiscal. But coming to monetary policy for the Fed or the ECB, it'll also be about, you know, further progress on disinflation, whether there are any surprises on inflation or growth, sort of the core things that a central bank typically looks for. And apart from potential US policies, the reason why this, you know, the fiscal versus monetary angle I thought will be interesting is because the global growth context as we go into 2025 is much weaker now. You know, be it Europe, China, you know, possibly in the US, and even cyclically in India. So I think it's going to be yet another year, an interesting year, in fact, ahead for the governments and central banks.
Well, that's a good thing for us. Lots to discuss then in 2025 as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do want to bring up the US trade-related policies like tariffs. Is that going to be an important theme as well, the impact really from those policies?
Absolutely. So Trump has proposed 60% tariffs on imports from China and 20% on the rest of the world. I mean, that's what his proposed plan is. But what we really need to see is whether US implements these tariffs right away when he comes into office, or uses it more as a negotiation tool. So if it gets implemented, we must see, you know, whether it has different tariffs for different products imported from the same country, what those countries' competitors are, and therefore what are the differential tariff rates, whether the US incentivizes domestic production of some goods on which tariffs have been hiked, and how global trade flows change. You know, for example, China could increase exports to non-US countries, while other countries increase exports to the US. So we have to see, we sort of look at these things, and we also have to see whether other countries impose retaliatory tariffs or any other measures, and how currency, particularly the Chinese yuan, moves. So it'll be really important to sort of assess the impact of, one, the tariff and fiscal policies, and two, the economic data that we keep getting, you know, the impact of these on US yields and the US dollar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And as we reach the end of today's conversation, Srijit, any last specific themes that we should be keeping our eye on in 2025?
So the easiest answer to that will be uncertainty, because which has been there and which will be around, of course. But as things gradually settle down, maybe towards the later part of the year or even later, we could start seeing a shift from central banks' reliance on concurrent data to more forward-looking data. We already saw the ECB chief economist speak about this. But like I said, this is probably not happening very soon. Mm-hmm. The other thing which is sort of stating the obvious will be that we'll continuously, you know, obviously evaluate growth and inflation to assess how the current central bank rate cycle progresses. Yeah. In that context, the theme of central bank divergence, which we sort of discussed at the beginning as one of the themes we had for 2024 as well, will be relevant going into 2025. As well, because growth, inflation, and fiscal context across economies, particularly among advanced economies versus the US Fed, is going to diverge. For emerging markets, including India, the global manufacturing cycle also really matters. So if you see industrial production in the US and Europe, these have already slowed. And inventory and shipment data for various countries also sort of have started to reflect this. And as EMs are typically exporters of commodities and goods at various points in the global value chain, this really matters. And therefore, tariffs and other policies by Trump should be viewed in this context for EMs.
Okay. A lot for us to, you know, keep our eye on. It's been a very eventful 2024. And I'm glad that we got the opportunity today to really, you know, reflect. I think the end of the year always gives us that opportunity, whether it's on a personal level or even in macroeconomics on the podcast. Also, a lot to keep an eye on in 2025. And like I said, exciting for us on Let's Talk Macro. Before we, you know, fully end today's episode, I'll quickly summarize the key takeaways. First, in 2024, we looked at central bank divergence, price stability versus financial stability, and cyclical and structural drivers of growth and inflation. The second point, in 2025, if we go by country, we will look at US exceptionalism, Europe growth risks and more aggressive policy action, China's fiscal stimulus measures and their response to Trump's policies, Japan's rate hikes based on whether there is a virtuous cycle between wages and prices, and in India, how the cyclical slowdown evolves and what the RBI's rate and liquidity response will be. And if we go by key themes for 2025, the things to keep an eye on will be fiscal versus monetary, because that will be an important factor in the US as Trump assumes office, but also in other countries as the growth context is weaker. The other major theme will be the global impact that we discussed about the protectionist measures like potential import tariffs imposed by the US. Further, central bank divergence, particularly between the Fed and other advanced economy central banks, global manufacturing slowdown and its impact on emerging markets, and hopefully a gradual start to central banks relying more on forward-looking data and less on concurrent data will be some of the other themes to keep your eye on. I hope that summarizes our discussion today, Srijit.
Yeah, Ahilya, I think that is spot on. And as we wind up the last episode of this year's Let's Talk Macro, I wish all our listeners a very happy holiday season and new year as well.
Yep, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas, a happy festive season, and a very, very happy new year in advance. I hope that you found today's discussion useful. Thank you, Srijit, for unpacking everything for us as always and guiding us into 2025 with all the know-how that we need to really stay abreast of macroeconomics. And, you know, fun fact, this is also our 20th episode. So I think we're wrapping up 2024 with a neat little bow, a round number. That's my favorite thing. We'll be back soon with another podcast on Let's Talk Macro, everybody. But until then, stay safe, stay happy, and of course, Happy New Year to you and your loved ones.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.